It's the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later in the hour, Ken Hawk Harrelson, the play-by-play announcer for the Chicago White Sox, will join us to talk about his career in the broadcast booth. He's gone part-time this year. He only goes on road trips, does not do the home games because he lives in Indiana, and he just doesn't want to take the trip. So the big question is this the last hurrah for Hawk Harrelson? We'll talk with him about his career and plans for retirement coming up after 9:30. But right now we continue our celebration of the Printers Row Lit Fest with my next guest, Chicago poet and author Ana Castillo. Ana's a tremendous poet, essayist, activist. She's also a playwright, and her latest memoir is called Black Dove, Mama, Mijo, and Me. Ana Castillo is one of the leading voices in Chicana literature. She's won all sorts of awards for her work, including the Carl Sandburg Award, and the fact that I love that she has two books banned in Arizona. She will be at the Printers Row Lit Fest on Saturday at 10 a.m. in conversation with Chicago Tribune reporter Darlene Glanton. She'll also be tomorrow night. She's going to be at the Hilton Asimus Gallery at 760 North Wells for a book party and a poetry reading with some of Chicago's great poets. And she's my guest tonight at the Download. Ana Castillo, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for inviting me.
I'm a big fan of your work, and it's great to have you in studio. Let's talk about Black Dove. This is really a memoir about it's a memoir about your life, but it's almost like a genealogy project about your family.
Well, it's a combination of essays, memoir essays, and I think some fall into personal essay that were written over a period of 20 years. The subtitle of the book is Mama, Mijo, and Me. Mijo means my son. It's an affectionate term that Mexicans like to use. We shorten up my son and say Mijo or Mijito, which is how I address my son. And there are essays in the book that I wrote at different stages of his life, in fact, which we kept in the present. Mama is in there mostly in the past. Unfortunately, she passed away about 20 years ago, but the leading essay in the book is an essay that I wrote while she was still alive. Mm-hmm. She lived in Chicago for over 40 years, and I was telling her story, and you're correct. I was telling her story with her mom and how she got back to Mexico. And
it really is. It's a great story, and it's a well-known story that's not told as much about Mexicans immigrating to America. Talk about that, because you sort of trace back your family coming from Mexico, including your mom, who had to go through a lot of hardships to bring you guys to Chicago.
Yeah, one reviewer said that it was sort of like being also a historian. And the reason for that, there's a sort of a tone in there in the beginning and at the end. The reason for that was 2 years ago, I was invited by Dominican University in River Forest to come and be in residence as an endowed chair for a semester. And one of the assignments or tasks that I had was to do a keynote address to the campus on the subject of immigration. And they work a lot with they have a lot of students who are Latino, and numerous who are undocumented. So in my usual fashion, I can't ever give a short answer to anything. What happened was, when I went to address what's going on now in terms of immigration, I went all the way to the beginning of immigration, European immigration, Asian immigration into the U.S., and that's why it has sort of that tone. And in the process of that, of course, I was weaving in my own family story.
Your mother, you know, I kind of mentioned at the end the hardships. I mean, to be able to come to this country and then talk about getting to Chicago. And that's really part of the essay that you talk about your mom, is about getting here. But it took a while to get here.
Well, I think what's important for me to talk about with regards to my mother's identity is my mother was three-quarters indigenous. She looked very indigenous. I take after her quite a bit. She had a very stoic, very quiet character. Her personality was like that. She never spoke English. 40 years in Chicago, I didn't know my mother spoke English. I don't know how. I thought she was managing. She worked in factories all the decades she was here. She sold Avon for over 40 years. So I don't know what
she didn't speak English.
And she didn't speak English. She didn't speak English to me. I found out sort of by fluke that she understood. I don't know what I was thinking. But that was her identity. And the reason why that's so fascinating to me is because, as a matter of fact, my mother was born in Omaha, Nebraska in the late 20s. Her parents had migrated here, as many workers did. This was a big railroad boom mm-hmm. in the U.S. and Mexico, and my grandfather was an engineer, and so he came here with his young wife, and they had a very lovely life and existence in the Midwest. And many people were recruited to come here and help with the railroad and with other things that were going on. In 1929, with the stock market crash, what we estimate unofficially, because it's not documented entirely, big surprise, is that maybe up to 1 million Mexicans and their American-born children were deported. Some were given tickets on those same trains going back. Some were threatened, and others were stuffed into cattle cars. I'm not sure what the story was with my mother and her parents. But this is how she ends up being right. raised in Mexico. And so
sort of like a
repatriation, yeah, she's going, unwillingly. She was deported from her own country. She was, we can argue about this as much as we want. But when you think about communities coming, you say, well, you come and you work hard and you establish yourself, and you too can have a piece of the pie. And I have photographs of my grandparents with their Studebaker, and my grandmother with her beautiful pearls, and my grandfather with his gold pocket watch. And to think that they were deported abruptly that way because of what was going on at that time, which is part of the history with Mexican labor. So I wove that into my own family story, which was very fascinating, because how my mother comes back here is actually she just came because she was an American citizen.
Yeah, right.
But nobody knew that to see She was comfortable because she was an American. She's proud
right.
of that.
She's living in Mexico. She's not, I mean, I think there's always a I don't know if it's a stereotype, but it seems to be a storyline that's pushed that Mexicans are looking to leave. They want to get to America as fast as they can because America is a land of the opportunity. But to hear your family's story and talk about your mom, who had American citizenship, she was okay in Mexico.
She was brought, in fact, across the border by her grandparents. What happened was, when they were deported, both of her parents died very shortly thereafter. I have a guess that it may have been tuberculosis, because that was prevalent during that time, and there was apparently no remedy for either one of them. So she was orphaned and began to work as a child, too. So they were left in poverty with her indigenous grandfather. And so they went to the border and crossed over their grandchildren, who were, by that point, they were teenagers, mm-hmm. so they could start working because they were American citizens.
Right.
She ended up in the Midwest, coming here with some cousins that were, had heard that there was work here.
How much of this story was passed down from your family, and how much did you have to research it and find different elements of it that wasn't told to you as a kid, even as an adult?
Everything about my mother's story, she told me in over a lifetime. The repatriations I learned when I was in college, and when I learned it, it just blew my mind, because I knew that was my grandparents' story. She didn't have that language. She didn't say that is what was happening in the big picture. She would have said something in Spanish, like, they sent us to Mexico and then my father died or something. But to find out that this was a real deliberate move on the part of the U.S. government, and how much that had affected my mother's life, really, really impacted me in my early 20s, when I was beginning to think of myself, amongst other things, perhaps a school teacher, what am I going to do, be a sociologist, as a poet. And so where that information ends up going, it goes into my verses and in my stories.
Talking with Ana Castillo, her new memoir is called Black Dove, Mama, Mijo, and Me. She's a poet, essayist, activist, Chicago born, and also Chicago raised. I mean, I would say you're still a Chicagoan, but
yes.
You spend a lot of your time in New Mexico. You kind of go back and forth. and to write, which I find so interesting, and I want to ask you about the process of writing. I mean, for you to put this together, to put Black Dove together, you go away. What's your process like going away to New Mexico for a writer's retreat?
I found a place in southern New Mexico in the Chihuahuan Desert. I'm not in the cool place in Santa Fe with all the cool artists. I'm up there with Georgia O'Keeffe descendants for the Maple Dodge Lodge and Taos. Where I live is where, you know, amongst the people, the few people that are out there, in a very desert, isolated area. There can be, you know, a week or 2 weeks where I really won't see another person, as a matter of fact.
Is that hard for you as a Chicagoan? Is it someone who grew up here in town where it's a dense, experience?
It's a wonderful balance for me to be here. At the same time, there are times, I talk about this in Black Dove, that I think that aside from having the poet's nature that, you know, that it's quiet, that it needs time by yourself and withdraws, and the writer's nature tends to be like that, solitary. Aside from having that, I talk about my growing up in Chicago and how it was in my home and how I think that there's a part of me that is, I wouldn't say antisocial, but doesn't really have a need for people all the time. Mm-hmm. And then there will come a time in which I'm really like tired of hearing people, the people upstairs or next door or outside. And so it's a wonderful break for me because I'm very comfortable by myself. Strangely enough, I can keep myself busy, not just writing, but just doing things on my own for long periods of time. I also paint. That was my first love. And so that's a nice place to be. But then I realize there comes a moment in which I look around and wonder, where is everybody?
Where did everybody go?
Where did everybody go? And I have to come
Let's
here.
Let's get back to Chicago.
Yes, and so here I am.
I mentioned in the intro that you are one of the leading voices in Chicana literature. What does that mean? For someone who's listening to WGN Radio, doesn't know what Chicana literature is, what is that?
Well, we accept that those of us who, at least of my generation, that began to write, who were of Mexican background, or descended from Mexican. We don't have to be first generation or second generation, just have Mexican background. But we also accepted it as sort of a political strategy to say, I'm not Mexican, I'm not from Mexico, I'm from here with this cultural background. Most of us have Spanish last names. When I was a young woman wanting to write, wanting to get into literature and went to these wonderful bookstores that we have here in Chicago, I very rarely found anyone with a Spanish last name unless she was in translation or he was in translation, like the Latin American boom writers. Those were some of the first people I began to read and could identify with as a Latina. But again, here I am in Chicago. This is a very diverse city. Back then, it was very segregated, so I was very conscious of other cultures and the division of races and so on. So we start to bring this together into a new aspect of American literature, and that's what Chicano and Chicana literature became.
A lot of your work centers around identity. This is just trying to find, you know, not just, you know, from your vantage point of what identity, but find a place. I mean, there's a lot of your poetry is about that. You've lived a life where you've been able to identify as Mexican-American. You've identified as a bisexual. You've identified as, as a writer, as an activist, as a player. Even your artistic disciplines are very varied. Talk about why you've centered your work around the concept of identity.
When you are marginalized by dominant society, we have still this idea that the United States is white. Maybe it is white in terms of who holds the power, but at the same time, when we look around, we see a great diversity in most places. But when you grow up in an atmosphere in which you're marginalized for the color of your skin, you're marginalized because of your cultural background, because of your gender, and your sexuality isn't mainstream, you know, nothing is following the norm of the dictates of our society, you can become invisible You can get depressed. You can just hide. You can go into denial and try to live a different life.
Or you can express yourself, right?
Or you can go ahead and assert that. And so in my early years, we used to say, Sandra Cisneros was also from Chicago and myself, and, you know, we're all over the country, and we'd read together here and other places, and people would label and say they're in search of their identity, or two Chicanas, you know. And we would find that sort of funny. We're not certain. We know what our identity is. What we were doing was defining it or asserting it. This is who we are, in case you're wondering, or before you ask, this is where we come from. To say we were from Chicago was not enough. They would still want to, like, dig deeper, but no, really, where are you from?
And so, you kind of want to be in control of that identity. You want to be able to tell that story. You don't want someone to tell the story for you.
Well, what happens is when you label yourself, when you identify yourself, you give yourself power by self-definition, as opposed to somebody giving you a label and saying, she's Hispanic. You know, well, we don't accept that label. We say, you know, I'm a Chicana writer. If you want to label my literature, then we'll call it that, because those are the issues that I'm addressing. That self-definition at some point in this long career of ours, because it's been a whole generation that worked on that, eventually created a space. We didn't find the space. Nobody gave us that space. We created that space.
Ana Castillo will be at the Printers Row Lit Fest on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. in conversation with Chicago Tribune reporter Darlene Glanton. She's also going to be she's going to have a book party and a poetry reading tomorrow night at the Hilton Asmus Gallery. That's 760 North Well Street. What time is that going to be at?
6 p.m. and on.
6 p.m. And there'll be a lot of great Chicago poets that have worked with you. Who will be there?
Well, Carlos Cumpian, who is a longtime poetry activist, and he'll be reading from my book. Sandra Jackson Opoku from the South Side of Chicago, novelist. I'm so happy she's joining me. Susana Sandoval, who's a poet, mm-hmm. and who just ran for Senate. Good for her. Ben David Garza, who's an actor. Erica Hilton, whose gallery it is, and who's also a poet. I feel like I'm forgetting.
And many more.
And many more. There's a lineup. Well,
that's tomorrow night at the Hilton Asmus Gallery at 760 North Wells, and of course Printers Row Lit Fest on Saturday. Chicago author Ana Castillo, her new memoir, Black Dove, Mama, Mijo, and Me. Ana, thanks so much for coming. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.